If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back. So I started yesterday by talking a little bit about the idea of militia, because the word militia has really turned into a dirty word. You hear things like assault. You think, like, when that precedes the word rifle, it's a bad deal. Profile, profiling, all that is bad words, dirty, dirty words. Militia, dirty, dirty word. And I have to tell you that it was militias that really gained us our independence from England. It was militias that were formed for security of little townships, and the little townships had those militias for security against who? Well, it was against the king's soldiers. All right? We had militias to be able to protect us from them, to protect us from, you know, basically anything outside that would come into the community and provide any sort of harm or, you know, disconnect or anything like that. It was all for security. So the term militia is commonly used today to refer to a military force composed of ordinary citizens to provide defense, emergency law enforcement, or even paramilitary service in times of emergency without being paid a regular salary or committed to a fixed term of service. It's a kind of a polysheme with multiple distinct but, you know, kind of a related meanings. There's some legal and historical meanings of militia, and let me read a couple of these to you. They include the following: defense activity or service to protect a community, its territory, property, and laws. Okay, that's about as good as you get. Let me read that to you again. Militia, defense, the meanings, historical meanings would mean defense activity or service to protect a community, its territory, property, and laws. The entire able-bodied population of a community, town, county, or state available to be called to arms, okay, as well as a subset of these who may be legally penalized for failing to respond to a call-up, and also a subset of these actually responded to a call-up regardless of legal obligation. That would mean people that weren't necessarily part of the militia that decided, you know, if there's a call-up, I'm going to join these guys. Here is another part of a definition for militia: a private non-government force not necessarily directly supported or sanctioned by its government. Okay, let me read that to you again. A private non-governmental force not necessarily directly supported or sanctioned by its government. Now, in the case of the United States, we actually would be sanctioned by the government. As a matter of fact, I have a provision that offers the sanctioning of militia. It says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's actually in the Constitution of the United States. That particular segment is actually the entirety of the Second Amendment, which is part of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution of the United States. So, the militia in the United States actually is sanctioned by that provision within the Constitution. Some of you might have been aware of that little thing called the Second Amendment. Some of the people in the government don't seem to understand that, and they may have lost that when just flipping through the leaflet version of the Constitution printed to someone else's standards. Okay, continuing, an official reserve army composed of citizen soldiers called by various names in different countries, such as the Army Reserve, National Guard, or State Defense Forces. Now, that's more of a modern term, because in our version, this Constitution was written back in the late 1700s, and the National Guard was actually brought around in the early 20th century, in the early 1900s. So there are some ideas of some of the definitions, some of the explanation behind militia. Now, the one that I really like is defense or service to protect its community, its territory, its property, and laws. The reasons, some of the reasons that I believe that militia are important in this country now are specifically to offer protection and offer protection of property and laws. Right now, we have different government organizations that are stealing private property. And they're taking it over, and then they're selling it off to private interests to develop, because they believe that that's basically necessary. The reason that some cities and counties and states are doing this is because they can then get some sort of revenue, tax revenue, a piece of the pie, whatever it is, from doing eminent domain on some private property. Now, there's a case that I read about recently. I forget where it is in the country. I'm sure some of the other hosts have spoken about it, and I'm sure some of you listeners know a little bit more about it. But I'm just going to give it in glittering generalities because I forget many of the details. There is a guy that owns a parking lot that is near an airport, and you got to pay to go there and park. Well, the city that this is in, and I forget which city it is, they are taking that property away under eminent domain with plans to then sell the property to a private company who's going to build a parking structure where a parking lot already exists. Now, tell me how fair that is. You have a guy and his son. They have a business. They own a piece of land. They bought this piece of land for $4 million. The city now wants to take the land from them under eminent domain and pay them $2.5 million for their $4 million piece of property, thus completely screwing them out of $1.5 million on top of the loss of the dollar, the devaluation of the dollar since then, so it's probably more like half or maybe even 60% of a loss rather than just 40%. Then they're going to take that land and they're going to sell it to another company that wants to build a parking garage. Why aren't we cutting out the middleman? Why isn't the guy who wants to build the parking garage trying to just buy the piece of land from the guys that are there? That's the way this works. You own something, somebody wants it, they make you an offer. You make a deal to sell it, or you can't make a deal because the people, whoever owns that property, doesn't want to sell it. And if you can't get your way, there is not any legal provision to then go to a government entity, be it a city, county, state, feds, whatever, and say, look, I want this guy's property to do this. I want, in this case, I want this guy's property where he has a parking lot, a paid parking lot, and I want to get it and build a parking structure and make more money because I have the finances behind me to build a parking structure. He won't sell it to me. So, will you guys please eminent domain this, buy it, screw him out of some of the money because, you know, quite honestly, I can get a better deal if you guys eminent domain it. And then I'll buy it from you guys. And, you know, I'll sweeten the pot by maybe 500 grand or something, but I'm sure as heck not going to give him all the value that it's actually worth. So that's what's going on. Now, there's an idea of property where the government has gotten out of control. Even a person in private enterprise has gotten out of control. And quite honestly, if you have a militia group of armed people saying, look, this is absolutely wrong. This is nothing that the founding fathers would ever have agreed to. And when it comes to the way that this country is supposed to be looked at, supposed to be run, it's supposed to be managed, it's under the provisions of the people who formed the country. Not under somebody else's new ideals. It's not a living, breathing document. It is etched in stone. Almost literally. So, that is the way that we're going to operate this deal. So, if you have a militia, an organized group of people with guns, that's the sort of thing that they can protect. When it comes to the laws, they're using eminent domain under some garbage reasoning that's far and away from any form of a law. Should there be some form of eminent domain just in case there happens to be very far outside extenuating circumstances? Well, the answer to that is yes. Let's say that there is a real problem with a flood canal, or a flood canal needs to be expanded, or maybe a flood basin needs to be put in to protect life and home and property. And someone's got some property, all right? Then, yeah, maybe consider having some sort of eminent domain for something like that to help out with preventing undue burden due to natural disasters, things like that. But not to take some guy's parking lot, take possession of it, sell it to somebody else so they can build a bigger, more elaborate parking lot in the form of a parking garage. Now, that's just one small instance of, if we had a well-regulated militia, an organized militia, that things like this probably would have never been happening. We could certainly stop them now. So the idea for the next segment is, how is it well-regulated? Stay tuned. I have some thoughts. You can call in if you'd like on this, 800-313-9443, and weigh in. I'll be back. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
.com.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, so let's talk a little bit about the well-regulation of a militia. So the regulation is undefined. I'm not sure if it has at any other time been defined by a court in this country. Not really too concerned either. Well-regulated simply means that you've got the purposes at hand, meaning the Constitution of the United States. You follow it, and you've got a defined command structure, such as any military sort of organization. You got a commander at the top or a board, something along that lines. Everybody there swears an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the state, of the United States, of, whatever area you're bounding to protect. And you have regular scheduled meetings. You have regular scheduled group events. You have people's, I shouldn't say, it's not like you have people's name and information logged in some sort of computer that the government has access to. That's far from any sort of militia that needs to be out there. And you have a command structure. Okay, once you have those things, that seems pretty well regulated, internally well regulated. Now, internal regulation, you have to have something to bind you to it. Because oftentimes you have an internally regulated organization, you don't get very far with anything. So an internally regulated militia must be bound by the Constitution of the United States, very possibly the Constitution of the state that you're in, which is probably a good idea, if nothing else, to keep any of the stateies from getting on your butt. And you abide by the law. You abide by the law as it was intended by the Founding Fathers. And you also have some sort of a plan, so you need people that have military backgrounds to understand things such as group dynamics, squad formations, fire and effect, just in case you ever actually have to go to arms. Now, militias don't just necessarily have to have guns and be willing to defend life, limb, property, support laws, defend against any tyranny that would otherwise stop that. They could be used for all kinds of things, such as if there's a problem in the community, such as a flood or some sort of natural disaster, or maybe a tornado goes through, the militia could always go and help out with that sort of thing. Help out not only with security, but help out with getting things back up in order. Now, that would certainly start shedding a brighter light on things. If you have a militia up in one of the northern states, let's say up in northern Ohio, and there's a large snowstorm, a.k.a. blizzard, and people are snowed in, emergency services can't get to them, or they need help doing it, the militia members could, with plenty of media attention being there, go in and help out and have a lending hand. You know, we from the northern Ohio, you know, 7th Militia or whatever, have donated our time and resources. We train for this sort of thing, and we're going in and we're helping out, and these are the things we've done, and blah, 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 blah. So things like that really help enlighten the idea of a militia. It would then also take away the ugly stigmata attached to the word militia. It would also be able to work for the opportunity that the Obamites might just have or take hold of to start squashing your rights, start imposing their otherwise illegal agenda. I'll give you an example. It's called healthcare reform. There's absolutely no single provision anywhere in the Constitution of the United States that provides for healthcare, that provides for this healthcare reform law, that provides for them forcing Americans to participate in anything like that. There is no provision in the Constitution giving them said authority whatsoever. Therefore, if they wanted to push it, and a lot of socialism, Marxism, communism, all starts with government-designed, government-regulated, government-run health care. If it becomes something that the regime in D.C. wants to say, look, this health care that we have, there is a health scare with people that have guns. It's become a national health problem, a national health emergency. So this required health care that you have to have, you're not going to be able to get if you have a gun. If you're going to exercise your Second Amendment right and have a gun, we're not going to be able to provide you health care, but you have to have the health care, so you better get rid of the guns. Yeah. That's one of the things where when they start trying to collect on the guns or forcing you into some government program, where the militia can step in and say, look, you have not cited any provision of the Constitution where this is legal. We have looked at it. We have had counsel on it. We believe that this is completely unconstitutional. So exercise your federal powers in some federal area, but not here in the state, not under the 10th Amendment, certainly not under us providing security of such under the 2nd Amendment. So there are some ideas, just very, very tiny scraping of the surface of some ideas on militia, purposes, and how they can actually be looked at a little bit more positively and change the stigma of the name militia. Got an update on my attempt to arrest a Las Vegas Metro officer after the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, so you might remember on December 10th, I came on the air and I was speaking about what happened the night before, the night of December 9th. That was a Wednesday. As I was in Las Vegas with my girlfriend, we went and saw a movie. We were on our way to kind of a later dinner. And on our way to dinner, there was a cop in a marked patrol car that was driving like a complete jackass, speeding like 15, 20 miles an hour over the speed limit, weaving across, basically, I shouldn't say weaving, He was literally shooting across three lanes of traffic without signaling, cutting me off, cutting off another driver. Gets to a stoplight. Once it turns green, hammering the gas, speeding through the intersection, swerving right back across all the other lanes of traffic. The right lane now turns into a right turn only lane, going straight through the next intersection from there, disregarding that, driving through an area marked off to not have any traffic, and then rapidly turning into the parking lot of a Taco Bell where another waiting officer was for some sort of, you know, conference or whatever it may have been. Even if it were a call, this cop was driving to the point where he should have been rolling code. That's with lights or lights and sirens to get to where he's going. But if you're not authorized to roll code, you can't break the law. That's in Nevada law. That's also in department policy for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. Okay? Just so you understand, all of that was a whole bunch of moving violations. All right? So I'm going to read real quickly the reckless driving law. Okay? Reckless driving or organization of unauthorized speed contest. Acts constituting reckless driving, penalties, court to suspend driver's license of certain offenders, additional penalty for violation committed in work zones. Okay, so one, it is unlawful for a person to A, drive a vehicle in willful or wanton disregard of the safety of persons or property, B, drive a vehicle in an unauthorized speed contest on a public highway, C, organize an unauthorized speed contest on a public highway. So this was 1A. That this cop did. He was driving a vehicle in willful or wanton disregard for the safety of persons or property, just whatever he wanted to get done. A violation of paragraph A or B of this subsection constitutes reckless driving. So number two, a person who violates paragraph A of subsection 1 is guilty of a misdemeanor, and for the first offense shall be punished by a fine of not less than $250, but not more than $1,000, or by both fine and imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 6 months. So what this cop did, he faces up to $1,000 and 6 months in jail for first offense. Second offense shall be punished by fine of not less than $1,000, but not more than $1,500, or by both fine and imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 6 months. So another misdemeanor. For the third and each subsequent offense shall be punished by a fine of not less than $1,500, but not more than $2,000, or by both fine and imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 6 months. A person who violates paragraph B or C of subsection 1 is guilty of misdemeanor and or blah, blah, blah. I don't really need to go in and worry about that because it was 1A that this guy violated. In addition to any fine, community service and imprisonment imposed upon a person pursuant to this section, the court shall issue an order suspending the driver's license of the person for a period of not less than 6 months, but not more than 2 years, requiring the person to surrender all driver's licenses then held by the person. And it goes on. It's quite a lengthy law. So I'm looking to get this imposed on a Las Vegas Metro police officer. Okay? What I did was I sent an email to the sheriff's office early on Friday the 11th of December, outlining all of the details of this. Now, on the homepage of Las Vegas Metro Police Department, it's lvmpd.com, it says a message from the sheriff. I'm going to read to you just the first paragraph. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is committed to our mission to protect the community through prevention, partnership, and professional service. That commitment and dedication extends to the millions of visitors that Las Vegas plays host to each year. I'm devoted to making what I believe is the best police department in the country even better, Sheriff Douglas C. Gillespie, who's actually my lieutenant when I was in the police academy. And he's a decent dude. Good guy, good cop. So, with all of this being said, I get an email response several days later from the Internal Affairs detective. It was unsigned, actually. We need more information on this report, specifically your address and phone number. So they need information on me. All right, so I give them my P.O. box and my phone number. Then the guy calls and he says, we don't have any record of that vehicle. So I look at the number. I said, my mistake. I typed an 8 where a 6 belonged. This is the proper number. Okay. He says, I should have something by the 28th. Well, the 28th came and went. So last week on Wednesday, I think it was, perhaps it was Tuesday. I think it was a week ago. I think it was last Tuesday. I sent an email back to that detective at the Internal Affairs Bureau and CC'd it again to the sheriff, the generic sheriff email address, outlining, look, I want something done on this. And in order for you to find whoever was driving this vehicle, this is all you have to do it. You have to call the area command, talk to the person that is in charge of the logbook where officers sign out the keys to the cars and their shotguns daily. Look and see who signed out that vehicle for swing shift on December 9th, and there you go. Then you can always get a hold of the people at dispatch and find out who was logged on to the MCT, which is the computer, the mobile communications terminal, the MCT of that vehicle for that shift. Confirm it and see where they were at 8:25 p.m., at 2025 military time and police force time. And see what they were doing between 2020 and 2030 to decide whether or not what they were doing was, in fact, exactly if they were where I said they were and doing what I said they were doing. Of course, you couldn't confirm that they were doing that. That's my word against his. But then again, that's all a citation is if a cop pulls you over. It's his word against yours. So, with all of this being laid out, a couple of days later, I get a call from a sergeant at the Internal Affairs Bureau. Very nice, very, very disarming kind of a guy. And he says, you know, we got your email, we looked it up. And he says, you know, here's the thing, is the officer that that vehicle is assigned to wasn't at work that day. I said, really? That's interesting. So who was driving the car? He said, we don't know. We don't have the car signed out that day. Really? Who was logged on to the MCT? Oh, we have no idea of knowing that, which is a lie, a bold-faced crock of garbage lie. So right then, I pretty well realized, okay, here's the deal. What they want to do is prevent a citizen from doing a citizen's arrest on an on-duty cop. Because if one time that happens, that's going to open up the floodgates for all types of citizens doing exactly the same thing, which is exactly what we should be doing. And there's no way they're going to allow that to happen. So what this sergeant tells me is the best thing I can do is forward this information to the captain of that area command, which happens to be the Enterprise Area Command. I can forward this information to that captain and see if there's anything he can do about it. So I'm sure it's probably gotten to the point of where that whoever was driving that car that day knows about my complaint, knows about my intent to do a citizen's arrest in the form of a citation for reckless driving. And I am sure that it has gone downhill all the way to the point where it's being handled internally. So I called a guy that I know, a buddy of mine who is still on the department, and I asked him, I said, are they assigning patrol cars to people now, or is it just a regular pool like it was when I was on? And he said, well, he says it's kind of both. He said the patrol cars are assigned to two different officers, so they get driven every day. But, this guy will have it this shift for these 4 days, and this guy will have it a different shift for these other 4 days. And there's not enough cars to go around, so there are some cars that are pool cars that cops that don't have cars assigned to them, they'll use a pool car. Now, one of the reasons that they've decided to assign cars to cops is if it's just a pool vehicle, that's just a vehicle you got that day. You're just going to drive it like you stole it. If it's assigned to you, you're going to take better care of it because that's your vehicle. You're now responsible for everything with it. You can't just say, look, I was just driving the thing out there and the transmission fell out and it must have been somebody else, something else that was going on. You can't blame me. Well, if you have a vehicle assigned to you, you can't very well use that excuse. They take better care of the vehicles. They last longer, and there's less maintenance cost. So that's a good idea. However, for them to tell me that the guy wasn't working, we don't know who had it. All they're doing is playing hide the weenie. There's probably at least two or three or four different ways to find out who was driving that vehicle then. And I flat guarantee you, absolutely flat guarantee to you, that if the police department absolutely had to find out who was driving that car for something internal, there would be no way of stopping them. They would absolutely find out who was driving that vehicle. So, I'm going to play this guy's game just a little bit. And I'm going to call. Now, it was Thursday of last week. And then I didn't clearly get this sergeant's name, and I forgot to ask before I got off the phone. So I sent a backup email saying, look, a sergeant from Internal Affairs called me regarding this. Can you please either A, have him call me again, or B, send me his name, because I didn't catch it clearly. Of course, I've gotten no response. So now, rather than being the open, honest department, their mission to protect the community through prevention, partnership, and professional service, as the sheriff would lay out, is now out the window. Because they don't want to deal with me. They don't want to have some citizen who's a former cop of Las Vegas Metro. I'm sure they know that by now. I'm sure they've run William Carnes and seen, oh yeah, well, hell, this guy was a police officer here. So I would imagine that now it's like look, we're just going to stonewall this guy. There's no way we're going to allow this to happen. That's fine. Because you know what I will do if I have to? I will just post up and wait in an area where cops are driving like a-holes and just handle it right then and there. I am going to have some sort of satisfaction on this. That is my goal, to have some sort of satisfaction, some sort of justice being served. So, with that sergeant having then said he's going to get a hold of the captain of the Enterprise Area Command, of which I have to find out who the captain is, but I happen to have the address and the phone numbers for Enterprise. It's listed right here on the homepage of lvmpd.com. And find out if, in fact, that sergeant did get a hold of the captain. And then see what the captain has to say. And let the captain know, look, you could easily find out who was driving that vehicle by doing this, by doing that, or by doing the other. So why don't you go ahead and do those things? Let me know how they go. Is tomorrow enough time to do it, or should I give you an extra day? And when we find out who that is, I'd like to come in there and sign the citation for reckless driving. I'd like to sign the citation. Let's see, of reckless driving would be NRS 484.377, pursuant to subsection 1A. Then I will be the person that he will have to face in court. Now, in a lot of jurisdictions, when I was on the police department, Las Vegas was certainly one of them, where on occasion, in Vegas it was once a month, one judge would have what he calls friends and family court. So people of, you know, police department or NHP or different city services or anything could come to this unadvertised specialized court being held during lunchtime where nothing else in the entire courthouse is going on, so nobody's going to be around to walk in, stumble in, and see it. Even the security guards that say, you'd go in and say, why are you here? Well, I'm here for your friends and family court. They'd look at your paperwork, then let you in. If you weren't there for that, they just wouldn't let you in because everybody was gone for lunch. They don't let people roam the empty halls of the courthouse. So they would have court, and, you know, let's say somebody got a ticket for, you know, failure to yield to a traffic control device, running a red light, causing an accident, right? They might get an expired parking meter violation is what they'd get. Or, you know, failure to wear a seatbelt, something like that. So they wouldn't completely dismiss it, but they'd knock it down to something completely trivial, usually a non-moving violation. Always a non-moving violation for the most part. And then they would dispense with it for whatever that fee would be of $35 instead of $400 or whatever it is. Friends and family of the court, right? So, with my signature on there, I don't know that they'd be able to get it into friends and family court. If nothing else, all of that information is public. You have to know how to find it. Luckily, I do. to where we could see if that actually happened. And if it did, I'm sure the media would be interested in knowing all about this. As a matter of fact, if I can't get anywhere with the captain of the Enterprise Area Command on this, and I get no satisfaction, the media is exactly where I'm going to get satisfaction. Because this is the type of garbage I'm absolutely sick and tired of. I actually had a suggestion from a listener of this program, as well as Dave Champions, who told me in an email, he said, you know, it'd be interesting to put together a book, kind of a guidebook, for citizens to be able to do exactly this sort of thing with law enforcement, with police. I thought, wow, how interesting. I talked with Dave about it. We batted a couple of ideas around. It would be a long, arduous process to do it. However, what a wonderful thing to have in the community. To be able to regulate the police when they are out of control. Like when they come onto private property and try and enforce some sort of traffic sort of citation or traffic law on private property. Anyhow, more to come after the break, guys. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. So there's a huge movement afoot across the country to essentially replace everybody in Congress as they come up for re-election. Re-elect no one unless it's someone of the likes of Ron Paul or some of the few and far between people that actually stand up, introduce good legislation, and essentially get ridiculed by those who are all in the mix and just really the scumbags of the entire system. Now, I want to lay a little caution on a couple of things. Replacing the people who we absolutely know suck is absolutely necessary. It absolutely should be done. And I'm putting it upon you, the American people, to do it. I'm going to do my part to make sure Harry Reid never gets back in. I'm going to do my part to get everybody who's in out, unless they're good. And I'm not talking just out of the state of Nevada. I'll use my broadcast voice here to go to all 50 states. Now, the thing is, be careful of who goes in there, because a lot of the people who would run for something like House of Representatives or U.S. Senate, this is not their first office they're trying to take a run at. They may have been a county commissioner for the last 16 years. They may have been a county commissioner, before that a city councilman, after that maybe a state senator. They've probably, most likely, been in the political system for some time. So although they might not be the corrupt person in office, they're simply the next person in line. So we need to have good, solid, honest people who would go so far as to sign an oath that would state, if in office, if and when in office, from the time you're elected till your term is up, whether you're on the clock or not, if anyone, be it a lobbyist or another politician or elected official, somebody who's appointed or hired by the government in any official capacity whatsoever, suggests anything illegal, tries to get anything illegal done, such as a payoff, or, you know, you do this for me, I'll do that for you, that this official will expose them and, if necessary, do their own citizens arrest on them, hopefully on federal charges. They would not only be under the stipulation to have to provide honest to God, good, positive representation of their constituents, but all of the outside evil influences, they would be responsible and, in fact, sign an oath to expose. To expose a lobbyist, the other dirty politicians, the other people in the administration, maybe somebody part of someone else's campaign. They would sign an oath to expose that. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Lenman News Hour, followed by Ernie Hancock, coming up next.
The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.